Hello, and welcome to this episode of EPRI Current. I'm your host, Bill Florence. Today, it's my pleasure to welcome three global energy leaders to our program in advance of the 26th World Energy Congress, which is being held in Rotterdam, April the 22nd through the 25th. Our first guest is Dr. Angela Wilkinson. Dr. Wilkinson is the World Energy Council's sixth Secretary General since the Council's founding in 1923, and it's a role she has held since 2019. She is one of the world's leading experts in global energy futures, an experienced energy executive, a distinguished Oxford scholar, and a published author. She has 30 years of experience in leading national, international, and global multi-stakeholder transformational initiatives on a wide range of economic, energy, climate, and sustainable development-related challenges. Our next guest is Neil Wilmshurst. Neil is EPRI's Senior Vice President of Energy System Resources and Chief Nuclear Officer. He has overall management and technical responsibility for the research and development activities conducted by EPRI with its global membership related to all generation sources and storage. In August 2021, Neil became chair of the World Energy Council's U.S. Member Committee. We're also joined today by Mark Menzies. Menzies is president and CEO of the United States Energy Association and is a distinguished figure in the energy sector with extensive experience in both public and private roles. He previously served as Deputy Secretary of Energy. He oversaw significant agency responsibilities, including research, nuclear programs, and environmental cleanup, while also contributing to landmark legislation as former chief counsel for the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Everyone, thank you so much for joining us today. Let's begin with a quick level set for all of our listeners. Angela, please tell us briefly about the World Energy Council and its role in the world energy ecosystem.
Well, thanks, Bill. It's great to see you again, and I'm delighted to be sharing this platform with Neil and Mark today. So for 100 years, the World Energy Council has operated as an open and practical, visionary, diverse and distributed energy leadership community. And we've grown into a deeply local and globally connected peer-to-peer platform with thousands of members as thousands of organizations as members across all regions of the world. And we share and shoulder, we think, a huge responsibility. Our founding purpose in modern terms is probably best expressed as the stewards of world energy transitions. We convene power for common good, we connect diverse perspectives, needs and interests, and we make change happen in energy for the benefit of all. So that's us, a 100-year-old community, alive, not dead, and looking forward at this 100th anniversary year to another 100 years of impact. And we couldn't do it without people like Neil and Mark and their organizations and members being part of the community as well.
Well, happy birthday to the council. Let me do make that official. So, Neil, can you give us a quick overview of EPRI and talk a little bit about your responsibilities for the U.S. Committee of the council?
Okay, so EPRI, we have been set up about 50 years, so kind of the junior partner between EPRI and the World Energy Council. And we were set up by the US industry to be a collaborative R&D organization to support the US electric industry going forward. Over the 50 years, we've grown into a global R&D collaborative, and we are pretty much one of the preeminent collaborative R&D organizations in the global energy ecosystem. So EPRI, my day job, tends to be focused around technology. As Angela just introduced, the World Energy Council is much broader and more diverse discussion than that. And I find the value of that nexus between EPRI and the World Energy Council being it takes our conversations to places they wouldn't go if you just had a technology focus. You start talking about the impact on society, the impact on individuals. In the energy world, during the transition, we always end up talking about supply chain. Supply chain, we talk about components. when you have the World Energy Council perspective, you bring people into the supply chain. So that is kind of the nexus I find between EPRI and the World Energy Council. And my role as the chair of the US committee is to build up that community, as Angela introduced, of those thousands of organizations across the world, and trying to make sure that the significant voice of America is heard in that World Energy Council community, and the lessons we learn can be brought to that community for the benefit of all.
Great. Mark, tell us a little bit about the United States Energy Association. Are there commonalities with what the work that you're doing with some of the work that's being done by the council?
Well, thank you, Bill. And I'm very pleased to join Dr. Wilkinson and Neil of EPRI on this podcast. And thank you for having me. Your question is a very good one. And indeed, there are commonalities both with the World Energy Council and with EPRI. Indeed, our mission aligns very well with Dr. Wilkinson's World Energy Council. Indeed, we were created 100 years ago also to be the U.S. member of the World Energy Council. When it was created, you know, to help bring energy around the world, to ensure that all have access to energy, which we know is key to prosperity and, of course, health and safety for everyone. So that mission continues today. And what we do at the USEA, we accomplish this mission in a couple of ways. On the international scene, to accomplish the missions articulated really by Dr. Wilkinson, we actually have contracts with USAID and the State Department. And so we work hand in hand with these government agencies and with our international partners in the developing countries of the world to ensure that we do bring energy to those that currently do not have that, or those that are going through the transition to help reduce emissions and yet still provide affordable and reliable energy, you know, to the peoples of these countries. We certainly know that over the next 100 years, you know, we'll have population growth in the developing countries, and we want to make sure that they employ systems and technologies that will help not only provide affordable energy to their people, but also to help reduce emissions. We are together working toward those goals. On the domestic side, much like what Neil had mentioned, you know, the U.S. Historically has been a leader in technology and in some systems development. We bring regulatory expertise, we bring technology expertise, and certain policies. And I think it's important that we share this, you know, not only with other countries, but here in the United States. What we think is a key driver in meeting the net zero goals and addressing the energy transition is going to be the technological advancements. And over these years in working together with the World Energy Council and with EPRI and other partners, we have experience in the community aspects, the locality aspects of bringing energy to these countries and communities. It is important. And we all have come to appreciate this, that while we may have the best technology, unless the community accepts it and understands it and is willing to invest in it and embrace it for the future, we really might not have accomplished anything. Same thing with our ideas in the U.S. or even the ideas internationally that are done. Our organizations are on the ground entities. We are the ones who either bring the policy, technology, issue solving solutions to these communities. So that's the exciting stuff that we do at the USEA, and I'm really pleased to be partners with my colleagues.
Mark, you mentioned the phrase, which said to use the word working hand in hand, and you know, in looking at these three different organizations, it seems like the concept of collaboration is a critical piece to each of the organizations here. But how important is collaboration to the missions of the organizations, and what are some of the opportunities and challenges when it comes to global collaboration? Angela?
Collaboration is a word that's thrown around a lot. We hear cooperation, collaboration, it's the keys. The other word that's used a lot is innovation. And there's no doubt that today's world energy systems are no longer fit for purpose, that we are facing big challenges, not just in terms of the global environmental side, but also in terms of the energy access side and the equity. And we all know technologically how to get to net zero, but we don't know socially how to get to net zero. And so collaboration is about how do you put who needs to be in the room, and not just who's in the room, but how do they operate together? And so we have started to talk about the new and different ways of aligning different interests and the choices in collaboration in an era where we have to get to impact at speed and scale. This is different to the last 100 years in terms of how we've managed energy transitions. We know no country can do it on its own. It requires multiple industries. It requires collaboration across borders. It requires collaboration top down and bottom up and horizontally. So I think collaboration is key. And Mark, Neil and myself all operate in a very crowded and very competitive leadership landscape. And what I like is the fact that we have organizations, I'd like to say, that are big enough to collaborate with each other, because really what we're motivated by is the common good and public interest. You know, if there's too many parts, nothing happens. And if they're too polarized, nothing happens. So that's the key, collaboration.
Neil, how does EPRI view collaboration?
Collaboration is actually the heart of EPRI. That is why we were established, is to form that forum for initially the US electric industry to come together and collaborate, to share lessons and to move forward. And everything we do is collaborative. It's really in our DNA. And I'll give you my perspective really is that we talk about 2050 like it's a destination. 2050 is the milestone to 2060, to 2070, to 2080. And there's going to be massive change in the energy world over the next decades, going on for out into the future. There is so much going to be done, so much money going to be invested. We haven't got time for everyone to make the same mistakes. We've got to learn from each other, share what worked, share what didn't work, so that that transformation of the energy system between now and 2050 and beyond can be done as effectively and equitably as possible. And that is the heart of the collaboration, learning what worked somewhere and what didn't work somewhere, so each of us in our own communities can figure out the right approach to move forward.
Mark, even though the name of your organization says U.S. or the United States in the title, I mean, your work, I mean, there's collaborative work being done across the globe. Isn't that correct?
That's right. As I had mentioned, you know, we have contracts with USAID and the State Department, the purpose of which is to bring U.S. Policies, technologies, solutions to the developing countries. And so we work together with our government agencies. Now, importantly, USEA itself does not keep all of the experts in all of these various issues in-house. We have learned that to be successful, and the reason that USAID and the State Department utilize USEA is because of the collaboration that we have had on the ground with local experts in these developing countries over the years. And so that's what sets us apart, I think. Indeed, when I joined USEA just within the past 6 months or so, I asked our 30-year employees, you know, what lesson would you like to impart to me? And several separately and independently came to me and said, the lesson that we have learned is that the United States can't simply walk into a country and say, this is the way that we are going to do it. Trust us, right? We've got the intellectual capacity, our expertise. We have, you're going to love the new technologies. You know, we talk in terms of markets and independence, and you're really going to enjoy this. And of course, they're listening, and what they want is they want energy. And of course, this is something, a distinction that we really should, I think, point out. It's the World Energy Council. It is the United States Energy Association. EPRI is the foundation and R&D of energy companies that have the obligation, not the choice, the obligation to provide energy to their customers and to people. And to do that, the energy has to be, it has to be accessible. We have learned that you have to provide accessibility to all strata of peoples in all countries, right? And that it has to be affordable and it has to be reliable. And so they want energy all the time, just like most people in developed countries have. But in the developing countries, they want the same thing, but it has to be affordable. What we don't have the luxury of in any of our organizations is to say, you know, we really want to focus 100% on, you know, renewables only. Well, that excludes, that generally impacts the power sector. It sort of excludes what else you can do in the transportation sector, you know, with biofuels and potentially hydrogen. Same thing also in the industrial and the commercial aspects of economies in these countries. So while we have to look at it comprehensively and collaboratively, we don't have the luxury of just saying, well, I only want to work on this or I only want to do this. So that's the greater call, I think, for all of our organizations.
Let's get, as I mentioned previously, the council is hosting its biannual, now 26th World Energy Congress in Rotterdam here at the end of April. And Angela, can you give us an overview of the Congress and why is it such an important event? I know there are what apparently almost like 20,000 people getting ready to attend.
Well, let me first iterate on two points. So the council's also a not-for-profit, right? We're not an industry association. We're not paid for by governments or by business. We're independent. And I also want to iterate Mark's point is that, you know, we very much agree. We're all like-minded here that it's experts on tap, not on top. That actually situations and starting points across the world are dramatically different. And actually to get faster, fairer and more far reaching energy transitions to happen in all parts of the world for the benefit of everybody and peace, we actually have to pull on all levers, right? Let's really work out what works in place for different societies and for different and diverse needs. So Congress is a part place where we pull all the energy action together and we ask ourselves not just what's the state of the union address on where is energy today, but how do we move forward together across these diverse geographies with these different needs and interests, and how do we move forward in a way, as Mark says, he uses the languages of clean, reliable and affordable. 20 years ago we introduced something called the World Energy Trilemma approach. It's used in over 120 countries, and it's how do they measure their performance and guide their pathfinding through energy transition to make sure that they're managing energy security. We all know how important that is. Environmental sustainability. No one would disagree that that's not important, but it means more than climate. It also means water and land use and forests, and also social equity. These questions of affordability and justice that are coming up from all parts of society. So that's what the action has to be. It's not about technology choices or technology innovation alone now. It's about these social choices, these institutional and market designs that enable billions more people to have better lives and a healthy planet. And so Congress is simply about redesigning energy for people and planet.
That was a very simple explanation.
Thanks.
And I mean, from Bill, if I can just add to that, I mean, from the United States Energy Association's point of view, we're very excited for the upcoming Congress. You know, we're all coming out of COVID, so we want to reestablish, you know, these great institutions and to continue and develop out that work. You know, for the it's important, I think, to note, as Dr. Wilkinson said, you know, what the Congress is all about. And it's an important gathering in addition to, and it's separate from, the other gatherings, you know, that we see now on a regular basis. So this is going to be the first Congress, I really think, since, COP 26, 27, and 28, you know, where, you know, where policymakers came together and made some, really dynamic decisions here. And so it's really recast, I think, you know, the whole transition. And certainly we have seen in the United States, the Biden administration and Congress really stepping up and bringing into policy in statute some of those goals that had been established at COP. And so now we have a chance here for the World Energy Congress to continue putting together pathways forward to accept a lot of these goals, to see how it is that we can begin implementation, what countries need. And so typically, this is an important event. Why? I mean, the World Bank, you know, the international financing institutions, all governments typically look at the outcomes of the World Energy Congress. So it's an important event. It is different and distinct from events like COP. But it's really an exciting time. And so much has happened since the last one. It's really going to be a great opportunity, really, to help develop the pathways, not only through 2050, but as we have said, for our next 100 years.
Neil, as chair of the U.S. member committee, I mean, what are you hoping to see and or perhaps to achieve from attending the Congress?
Well, really building on Andrew and Mark's comments, you know, it's easy to look at the Congress as an isolated event, and it's really part of this continuum of all the different meetings. And great progress has been made at COP. I'm looking towards Congress to really be the start of people understanding the commitments that were made at COP and moving away from discussion towards what does it take to actually move to action. You know, time is short between now and 2030. It's short between now and 2050. There's a lot to be done, and we've got to harness the energy that was there in Dubai at COP and actually start bringing in the societal aspects. And the discussion needs to move to what are we going to do in order to move this transition forward, bearing in mind the aspects of the trilemma. And if we can keep that momentum going, grasping that energy from COP, it'll truly establish the Congress as part of that continuum of meetings leading to supporting this energy transition.
Angela, anything else that you'd like to add about the Congress?
I would like to say we keep a very practical focus on the how to make faster, fairer, and more far-reaching energy transitions happen, and the who with needs to be engaged in that. So the how to's and who with's are really what Congress focuses on.
And Bill, I'd like to add, you know, the value of WEC in a very practical way from organizations like mine that appreciate its partnership with the World Energy Council. The World Energy Council, as Dr. Wilkinson says, actually provides toolkits and meaningful data upon which you can go, which is updated, I think, quarterly, if that's not, or more accurate, or more recently than that, Dr. Wilkinson. But, you know, they do, they release, they take surveys internationally on key issues of the day, and they do a pulse report. I think it's called the pulse. So they're taking the pulse of all organizations across the world on issues that are important to them, broken down by country and regionally and by issue, and how they prioritize things. And it's more than just policy. It is actually bringing it down to the everyday working of how energy can be brought in and how the trilemma can be met. Does it provide, does it address equity, right? Access, affordability, reliability, and clean. That's data that helps drive decisions here in Washington and with our countries, with our partner countries. We also have members that do work business to business in other countries, as well as in the U.S. And so we were able to link, you know, where the different policies are moving in different countries and what the priorities are, so that you can really get an actual path to solutions. And the World Energy Council accumulates this, and it's very objective because they are like all of us. We're all 501c3s. We're not trade associations, right? We let the facts speak for themselves. I think that's of value. And so we're really excited about that.
Neil, any final comments or thoughts that you may have?
Well, I'd just like to reinforce, I think, the whole back note of this conversation of how important and unique the mission of the World Energy Council is, because we're all so comfortable going straight to talking about technology. And as Mark said, so often we show up in a country abroad and say, well, if you only did it this way, everything would be perfect. The World Energy Council brings us all together to learn from each other, to learn that every country's different, to learn cultures are different, need different solutions. And I really think this concept of the World Energy Congress being part of the continuum of the meetings between COP and Clean Energy Ministerials and all those other meetings will prove to be incredibly powerful in the energy transition.
Angela, I'd like to give you the last word, if you'd like anything else that you would like to add.
Just let's go back to the beginning. 100 years ago, we convened for the first time, excited about the possibilities of electrification and international cooperation. And we're convening again 100 years later, excited about the possibility of new technologies and new forms of collaboration. And the US was a founding member of the World Energy Council. And we would like to see the US playing a big role in the next 100 years of impact in energy.
Angela, Neil, Mark, thank you so much for being our guest today. I really appreciate it. And I think it was a really very interesting conversation. For those of you who would like more information on their respective organizations, you can visit www.worldenergy.org, www.epri.com, and www.usea.org. And we'll have that information on our website, which is www.epricurrent.com. And we'll try to put some text here on the bottom of the screen. So if you enjoyed today's podcast, please go to epricurrent.com to subscribe or subscribe through your favorite podcasting channel. That's it for this episode of Epri Current. I'm Bill Florence signing off. We'll see you next time. If you like today's show, we invite you to subscribe to our podcast and feel free to share the podcast with your colleagues and friends. For more information about Epri, please visit our website at www.epri.com. And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter at Epri News. Together, we are shaping the future of energy.